Welcome to the DBS Films Podcast, a behind-the-scenes look into making indie films. Learn from DBS Films about their process, tips, and fun stories that all come with making multiple movies a reality.
Hey everybody, welcome to DBS Films Podcast. My name is Kellen, with me as always my brother Brendan, and together we make movies with DBS Films. Today we're going to go into part two of tips on marketing your indie film. We really want to try and go into in detailed tactics that we use to give our movies the best chance at success. In part one, we talked about your overall approach to marketing and why it should really be just as important to making the film if you really want to have a good chance at succeeding in this industry. As always, be sure to go ahead and take a look at our Discord channel online. It is the place to be. It's where we have all of our fun events. It's where we hang out all the time. And more importantly, that's where we look to cast for our crews and our cast when it comes to our upcoming horror features. We make movies for our fans, with our fans. So if you want to get on this action, be sure to check it out. So Brendan, you know, just to kind of start it off and recap, something we were kind of talking about is the landscape has completely shifted. Now you really need to be the driving force in marketing your movies. It was a lot harder to make movies back in the day. And with that being said, there's a lot less competition for movies. You didn't have smartphones, YouTube, social media apps, all stealing your eyeballs when it comes to getting views on your movie. But it's also allowed you to be more flexible than ever in the sense of you can actually, reach out to your community, have social media presence, and really kind of build your own type of following, which is super critical. Do you want to kind of just, again, reiterate why marketing is such a key element and how just having a product is no longer enough? You need to be sure that you get that product out there and is seen as much as possible, especially when it comes to a movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you just have a product, you're in a sea of a whole bunch of other products. And, like what Kel says, you're not just competing with movies. You're competing with video games. You're competing with apps on people's phones. You're competing with TikTok. You're competing with Instagram. And, people already have busy lives. To ask them for an hour and a half of your time for an indie movie that's very low budget, that, could have a lot of issues with it, is very difficult. There's very few people that are going to watch an indie film versus like Thor or Avengers or some, big time movie that you kind of know what you're getting. And I was like reading a study on why Adam Sandler does so well on Netflix and why he kind of just kind of churns out these movies that, they're not very good movies, but a lot of people enjoy them. Because it's Friday night, you have an hour and a half of time, you're sitting down with like your significant other. Adam Sandler is the safe choice. You're going to get some laughs. You're going to get a kind of funny, quirky, movie, but it's not going to be too crazy. And it's probably not going to be absolutely horrible. So, why would you not choose anything else? So that's like what you're competing with. And as an indie, filmmaker, it's an uphill climb where marketing allows you to, get in front of these people and kind of separate yourself from a pack of just endless titles and covers on Amazon and Netflix. So I think you have to keep that in mind. You have to understand your target audience. And, if possible, you should have a community that already likes your movie and is looking forward to actually having your movie launch. I think that that's in itself is probably the most powerful thing you can have.
It really is the case where, nowadays, if you can cultivate that audience and that community, it gives you such a safety buffer because you're not relying on other platforms. That's why we preach it. That's why we say, make as much stuff as you possibly can because it gives you as much opportunity as you can. And then really, a good place to start is we say, when we make movies now, we literally start with marketing in mind. And honestly, one of the bigger things with it is, we didn't even know what good marketing was for movies, even when it came to writing the scripts for the first, few, because we didn't really quite know how to make that script and execute on it, but we still had a good core idea with it. So you want to, briefly hop into, you have to have an idea that interests people. And I think, I mentioned it in the first episode, you kind of get blinders as an indie filmmaker of just thinking one idea or something like that. And you almost kind of pave over the pit holes or plot holes that you think, but really they're still there. You didn't really quite address them. So do you want to talk about how it's critical that this idea really has some, power to it in the sense that it's a concept that people can immediately get and understand what they're about to get with the movie?
Oh, of course, especially as an indie filmmaker, your audience is going to be so small already. that if you don't have an idea that is interesting, that's intriguing, and that can, you know, that a wider audience like wants to watch or is interested in, you know, you're only really gonna, you know, hurt yourself. And I see a lot of indie filmmakers who have such the like such a small, tiny niche movie, and then they take it out to the marketplace. And as an indie filmmaker, your distribution options are much lower than, you know, Netflix or Hulu or the top tier stuff. So already, you know, it's an uphill battle to gas people or to ask people at that level to watch your movie. You know, it's even if you have something that's wide and has mass appeal, the amount of people that you're able to get to actually watch your movie are going to be very small. So you see a ton of movies that were made for $50,000 to $100,000 on Amazon Prime, on Vudu, on Tubi, and they'll have like 3 or 4 reviews. And that's it. You know, these are movies that have top tier distribution companies. The distribution companies put them out there and there's just no audience for it. So they have the only 3 or 4 reviews they have are, you know, friends and family. And that's how you can always tell whether or not a good, you know, an indie movie is getting traction. Just go look at the IMDb, see how many reviews they have, see how many reviews they have on Amazon. Very difficult to get Amazon reviews. And that'll give you a good sense of, you know, the marketplace. So if you are creating a movie that's, you know, that you can look at and find similar titles, go look at the review count. See how many people are actually watching and engaging in the movie watching process. Because even if you get a negative review, even if the reviews are very bad, at least you're getting engagement from people. They're watching the movie, you know, long enough to actually leave a review, or you've pissed them off enough to leave a negative review. All that stuff is feedback. It's good. It's engagement. When you're looking at other ideas and whether or not a idea is marketable, I'd look at reviews and just what people are saying and making sure that people are actually downloading these movies in the genre that you're trying to, you know, make your next feature in.
So that's a good point. I think it's something that I want to kind of bring back from, you know, the first episode a little bit too, which is one of the biggest recommendations that I would have is I would just say start it with horror. I honestly, if you want to make your money back, I think it's going to be substantially harder in any other genre. And it's going to also cost you more money simply because, as you're mentioning with Adam Sandler, you need to have star power in pretty much any other genre. Horror, you don't need to have that. You just kind of need to have the overall concept to it. But any other movie, rom-com, thriller even, I mean, you need action stars. Look at Tom Cruise. You need names and things like that to go. And I really do think the most tactical thing would be start off with horror. It's the easiest one to do. And you still learn so much when it comes to the entire process that now more than ever, we can make a jump to another genre when we're comfortable enough. So do you want to just kind of highlight why horror is really the place you should look just if you want to find a marketable movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I talked about in the last podcast, it's just, if you can sell fear, fear is very easy to sell. And horror audience members are really looking for a situation. If you can take your characters and put them in a situation that's relevant to a whole bunch of other people, then people are going to watch your movie because they're more interested in what's going to happen in the world and the villain that you create than all the other stuff that Kel just mentioned. And they want a fast-paced movie. They want something that's going to move, that's going to keep them on the edge of their seat. And, you know, they're willing to forgive technical issues. They're willing to forgive actors' performances. And a lot of these movies are supposed to be just gritty. That's why found footage is so popular. And you're forgiving. So with found footage, you're essentially forgiving the whole cinematic process of like having nice shots and nice angles and lighting for something gritty, just because it's more realistic and the world and atmosphere and tone that you're putting your audience members in is more interesting than, you know, a lot of the other stuff that you absolutely need if you're going to have a cinematic movie that is not horror.
Yeah, it really is the case where it just sets it up so easily. And it's one of the things where I think that genre in itself is marketable. So, you know, we're talking tactical tips. I had to bring that one up again because I just think, you know, there's a lot you can do with horror. You can experiment. You can do a horror comedy. You know, you can kind of add elements of it in there. But having a horror element to it, I think is going to just by far give you the most range when it comes to what you're able to do. So this is going to lead to, you know, what I think is honestly the most important thing we're going to mention this entire episode, and the three things that you need to have in order to have any kind of shot nowadays. That's going to be the title of your movie. That's going to be the cover art, and it's going to be the trailer, because you have such a limited amount of time to get someone's attention to go ahead and start your movie, let alone finish it. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah. And I think by far the most important thing, or element that he just mentioned, is your cover art. Because the way streaming platforms work now, if you go look at Tubi, if you go look at Netflix, it's just a giant front page, web page of just a whole bunch of cover art. Some of them are done very, very professionally. And if you don't have something that catches my eye that I could click on, you know, you're pretty much invisible. So if you have a indie looking, you know, cover art that doesn't essentially look professional, you're in a lot of trouble. So then once I click on that, that movie, what do? I click on the trailer. You got to have a fast-paced trailer. Within a minute, you need to know exactly what this movie's about. I need to know, you know, whether or not I'm going to be interested in this movie. Does it have some questions or some mysterious stuff that makes me intrigued to, you know, essentially watch the entire feature? And then finally, it's the title. You know, how memorable is your movie? Can I remember the title of your movie and recommend it to friends? There are so many indie movies that, you know, I watch and I enjoy that I just can't remember the name of it. So at that point, I can't really recommend it because I'm like, oh, I wish I could find this movie or remember this movie because you really, really like it. And I just can't. And I also think the title helps sell it too. You know, it's going to be on the cover. So you want to have something that is intriguing and you want to drive those clicks. So I think half the battle as far as like getting your movie up on platforms is just getting the first step of getting someone to click on your movie. And that's your cover. Then the next thing is to get them to click on the actual watch button. And that's going to be your trailer. And then at that point, you're pretty much, your hands are tied, because it's whether or not you made a good movie. Is your movie paced well enough that someone could click that final watch button and watch it all the way through? But you'll never really get to that point if you don't have a good cover art, you don't have a good title, and you don't have a good trailer.
It's super critical. And honestly, I think it's actually something I want to touch on really quickly, that I think the film industry, specifically the indie film industry, because I know Hollywood for sure is doing it to, you know, the nth degree. But I think the indie filmmaking industry does it in reverse. And it goes back to the whole blinders concept we have. And I think because people get so attached to an idea, they get attached to the name of their movie, they get attached to kind of different things of it, and maybe they have the log line or what they want it to be before they actually have the entire thing, or a synopsis that they've, you know, this is my favorite log line, you know, get a load of this, or it's going to be this, and this is exactly what it's going to be called. Whereas we work in the opposite sense. We say, hey, we're going to test out 50 of these. We're going to do split tests. We'll explain what the split test is, you know, a little bit after this. But with the idea of, we're so open to the marketing element of it that we now have joke names for them for the most part as our working titles, just so we don't really get attached to them, because we understand that we are not our audience. And the name that we're going to call this, and the cover that we're going to call it, and the log line we're going to call it, are going to be decided by the audience that we're looking at. And again, we do have a, you know, a guiding shape in what the terms are and the ones we use, so they all do fit the movie to some way. But it is the reason why a lot of our movies are called The Haunting Of, and why you see a lot of buildings on our cover arts, is because that is what the market is telling us sells.
Yeah, I mean, I can't beat the floating cabins. We tried, I think I had about 400 or 500 covers for the last one. And I just, people like floating cabins. So it's like, all right, I give the audience what they want. So, I mean, that's just how it is. Do I really like the floating cabins? No, not really. Do I really like calling all our movies The Haunting Of? No, not really. But it's what people want. And it makes sense. It's like, look, here's a cabin. This movie is going to take place in a cabin. There's blood coming, you know, off the bottom of the cabin. It's a horror movie. It's in a cabin. It's probably in the woods. It's got, you know, like 80s, 90s horror vibes to it. So people see this cover. They've seen these covers done before. They've seen movies that have similar covers. They know what they're getting into. And I think this is, it just comes back to, someone needs to be able to look at your blurb, your title, and your trailer and know what they're getting themselves into. They don't want to have to just go and be like, what is this movie about? Because if they're like, what is this movie about? They're not going to take the time to watch your movie because it could be something just that doesn't interest them at all. But you look at our movie covers and you're like, all right, I've seen horror movies of similar stuff. I know what movies they are. I know what I'm probably getting myself into. When you say it's The Haunting Of, all right, it's a haunted house movie or something's haunted, I know what I'm getting myself into. And I think removing the doubt and the uncertainty is half the battle of, you know, getting people to commit their hour and a half. They need to know or at least have some kind of expectation of what they're getting themselves into. And they have to want to get themselves into that situation as far as watching your movie. If, you know, you have this movie that's a sci-fi genre, romance comedy movie, and you know the blurb's kind of ambiguous, the cover could be a thriller, it could be a comedy, it could be romance, I'm just going to skip it because I have no idea what this is about, I have no idea what's going to happen, and I don't want to waste my hour and a half of time.
Yeah, and I really do think, you know, personally, Girl in Cabin 13, you know, while we do a lot of work with the all of our movies, I really think we hit it out of the park with Girl in Cabin 13 in the sense of, it was a straightforward idea. It was, you know, we understood the marketing of it. We hit the home run when it came to that cover art, you know, that we ended up split testing, and the blurb works really well. So I think if you want a textbook and kind of the way to present your horror movie, I really do think The Girl in Cabin 13 is kind of a milestone to it. So it's one of those movies where if you ask me, my biggest issue was, I was like, you know, I don't really think there was a plot with it. We go into detail about it in our episodes where we highlight the whole process. So if you want to listen to everything, you can go back and take a look at it. But to me, it was something where we just wanted to kind of, you know, do something that we knew was something that we could do in the sense of filming it and getting it uploaded, because we had taken so much time off and the last movies we had were such a nightmare in post that we were kind of worried about that. It was a smooth shoot. But because we were so marketing focused on this one, I really do think we hit it out of the park. It's your straightforward thriller. People understand absolutely immediately essentially what they're going to get into. And I think that's why you're seeing it working the algorithms on a lot of the sites. And working the algorithm simply means people like your movie. So you want to talk about how you really have to put it in that chance to ride the top of the algorithm, because the percentages are so different from the top performers to the rest of the pack.
Well, I mean, I think the two metrics from my experience that these streaming services work off of is, the first one is, you know, are people clicking on your movie and watching your movie all the way through? A lot of these platforms, especially Tubi, are paid via ads watch, and they want to push movies that people like. If they're turning your movie off, it's telling the algorithm, hey, something's wrong with this movie. These people don't like this movie. Let's push it back down, you know, and pull another movie up that might be more watchable, because they want to have user engagement. They want to, probably one of their key metrics is how many hours of footage is watched every single day. So they want to, you know, reward the movies that people are clicking on and watching all the way through. And because that's just a good customer experience. The second big metric is when they click on your movie, they click on your title, or they click your link to actually get to that watch link. Do they click and watch the movie, or do they click the back button? So if people are clicking on your movie, reading your blurb, looking at your title, looking at the cast and, you know, all the information on your movie, but aren't clicking that watch button, that tells the algorithm that, you know, something's wrong, that something wasn't, you know, engaging enough for you to click on that. And that's going to, you know, hurt your movie as well. And it's going to push it down the algorithm. So you really want to focus on the click-through rate, which is what you need to do with the stuff that we mentioned before, with the trailer, the cover art, and the blurb. And then you just want to make sure you have a movie that's very well paced, that goes, I'd rather have a movie that goes fast as opposed to slow. And if you can get both of those, which I think The Girl in Cabin 13 does, you'll have a lot of success.
Yeah, it really is the case where those things are so critical, because again, your major platforms, And this is, you know, if you are getting distribution, but even if you're not getting distribution, you're just going through, you know, the straight to upload route, split testing your titles, the cover art, all of those things would be super critical and just giving yourself the best performance. Because at the end of the day, you're working off of their platform. And the best thing you can do is get the organic support from their platform to push you up as much as possible. Because I mean, those are the $1 trillion companies out there, in the sense of they're putting all of their processes behind you. If you can find a way to show them that the, you know, customers are getting what they want. And that's why having those three things in place, specifically the cover art, is super critical. The next thing I want to talk about, because it kind of is twofold. One, we talk about split testing a lot, and typically a split test is just us running different sets of ads with slightly different variables. So do you want to first talk about the split test? Because I think regardless of someone, you know, I hear a lot, I want to do Facebook ads or Google ads or ads like that. I think the best thing you could do is a split test to understand how you can get the most out of your bang for your buck. So before we talk about the pros and cons of running ads, you want to talk about our split test process, what that is, and more importantly, how anyone can do it. I mean, you can do it literally on any scale nowadays because of these platforms like Facebook. So again, this goes back to, while it's never been harder to get the views and whatnot, it's never been easier for you to empower yourself to actually go out there and get them.
Yeah. I mean, like what Kel said, like the organic traffic is going to be so beneficial on some of these platforms, specifically Amazon, Tubi, that's just free. You would have to spend literally tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars to reach these audiences. This is why these platforms are so lucrative, is because they have the opportunity to reach these audiences. And you're going to shoot yourself in the foot if you're not spending as much money as possible on making sure that everything's optimized. And this is like from your blurb to your cover art to your trailer. If it's not completely optimized, even the $5 to $10 that it's going to take to split test stuff, that's going to be your best ROI. Split testing is going to be your best ROI for this kind of stuff, because the amount of organic traffic you're going to get, it's going to skyrocket your movie through the algorithm. And that is why we spend so much time and attention. We'll split test 300 or 400 covers. We'll split test 300 or 400 different titles. I did about 40 or 50 trailers for Murder House, and you just have to be doing this stuff. If this will be, as an indie filmmaker, your best ROI, moving forward.
So to kind of highlight the way that the split tester works, is we essentially are looking at promoting just a link to our trailers is usually the way that we're going. But what we do is we essentially will change one variable. So every single ad will have the same thing, except the title will be different. And that's essentially how we end up finding the best title. What we'll have from there is basically the blurb will be the only thing different. So the title and the trailer. So you basically change up only one part of the ad each time. And the difference is, you know, incredible. I mean, can you just talk about the worst performing? Let's say you ended up putting your budget towards the worst performing ad versus your best performing ad. What's the difference that we typically see on the range of our split tests?
It'll be 10 to 20%. So like there will be ads and covers and titles and blurbs, especially a fully formed ad, which would be, you know, split tested title, split tested blurb, split tested cover. Some will cost 25 to 30 cents a click. And then usually the winners will be 4 or 5 cents. So you're looking at five or six times. One ad is doing 5 or 6 times better than another ad. And so that ad, I know, or that when we finally get to that point, I know that winning cover, that winning title, that winning blurb is going to be 6 times as more profitable, pretty much, because you're getting 6 times as much organic traffic off these platforms than the other one. And this is after like having an idea of how to actually do this stuff. The 300 titles and tests and blurbs and everything that I'm creating, I already know that they're going to be good. So I'm only putting the really good ones in the ring. So if you don't have any of this and you're just going off like, you know, what title you think is good in your head, or what kind of cover art you can get off like Fiverr or some kind of smaller service, or God forbid you try and do the cover art yourself, man, you're putting yourself in a really hard position, and you're going to have to spend more money to get yourself out of that position where we're essentially, we have the rock at the top of the mountain and we spend all our time, you know, essentially building it and making sure it's nice and round. And all we have to do is push it and it just gets its momentum and goes all the way down, where I think most indie filmmakers are just pushing that thing up the hill, and it's just harder and harder if you're not actually, you know, giving this stuff the time and attention that it deserves.
I completely agree. And, you know, one thing I want to talk about now, because maybe you listen to this like, oh, sweet, I'll do these ads, I'll do the split testing. Well, there's a very useful point and purpose of these ads, which is, again, really to help you get to the organic wave and surf it. Because you want to kind of talk about, you know, you mentioned cost per click of 2-4 cents, but really nowadays with the streaming algorithm, if you're not riding the algorithm, don't you expect that you're going to actually pay your way for it? Because you're going to actually, even at the best, like you said, 2-4 cents, that's eating up a lot of the revenue that you would be looking at as a streaming service if they even complete the entire movie, which is not guaranteed. So do you want to kind of address the benefit again of split testing, but also if you are putting actual capital towards it, why it's smart to be strategic on launch days, things that can help you get set up to, again, get that rock a little bit of momentum?
Yeah, I mean, you're not pushing a product like we talked about the DVD stuff. You're not pushing a product that you're going to make $15 on a sale. You know, most streaming platforms are going to pay 8-12 cents per watch. So like, if you're not getting that organic traffic, your margins are so slim that you're not going to be able to make a profit. Cause if you're getting, you know, clicks for 5-10 cents and you're, you know, shoving that traffic to a streaming platform and the streaming platform is paying you 12 cents and then your distribution company takes, you know, 20% of that, you're right back to breaking even. And that's breaking even if they watch the movie all the way through. So if you're not working on organic traffic, if you're not trying to get organic traffic, you're just not going to make any money. It's just impossible. It's essentially a math equation, and it's not a math equation that is in your favor. So obviously using paid traffic to spike the algorithm and let the algorithm work for you is a huge benefit, and you have to do this. We do it on all our launches. We tell our whole community to go, and you know, I'll do paid advertising, and we'll just try and get as much traffic on that stuff as possible, as quickly as possible. Because the algorithm will be like, hey, here's a new release, and it's got a lot of people watching it. Let's kind of reward it with some organic traffic and see what it does. Well, that organic traffic, you know, they see a good cover, they see a good blurb, and then they watch a movie and they watch it all the way through. The algorithm's like, hey, you know, the people who are clicking this are watching the movie, which is what I talked about before. That's the first thing they want to see. The second thing they want to see is that people who start watching that movie watch it all the way through. When you check both those boxes, the algorithm's like, hey, we have a really good movie here. Let's just open the floodgates. And that's when they open up the charts and they let you just skyrocket it and put you on the front page. And if you watch it, it is exactly how it played out last time with our launch with Garland Cabin 13. We launched it. I ran paid ads for about a week and the movie did well. It was like moving. It was like top 30, top 20 in the Tubi store, which is really good because there's a lot of really good content on Tubi. And then things started to change. The algorithm started to push it a little bit. It went from to 15 to 10. And then I woke up the next day and it was the number one movie on Tubi. And we were the number one movie on Tubi for about 3 weeks, I think. And then, you know, you start to see the burn rate. Usually a lot of these streaming services have a 30-day window where they start to just promote other titles instead of yours. And that's when the algorithm starts to slow down and it fell off. But I mean, that's pretty much what my experience in the publishing world is, my experience working with Amazon, with a lot of these streaming platforms. The algorithms, it's not the smartest when you think algorithms like the greatest thing ever and it's some kind of AI technology. It just wants to see that, you know, people are clicking and engaging with your content and they're making sure that the best content on their site is the most visible as far as like store-wise. So if you're not, if you don't have that mindset and you are, you know, missing something, some piece, so that when the algorithm does give you that visibility and people aren't reacting positive to it, you know, it works in the same way in the other direction. If the algorithm's like, hey, these people are giving us a negative score, they're clicking on our movies and they're backing out, or they're watching the movie and they're quitting after 6 or 7 minutes, the algorithm is going to, you know, punish you for that.
Yeah. And again, it really goes back to, you got to work for the algorithm in the sense of doing what you can, because it's really the Goliath in the room. So if you are looking at using paid ads, it would be something where, you know, having strategic, trying to get that traffic spike right away to help yourself on launch day is probably going to be the most beneficial. Long-term though, it usually isn't in your favor unless you have some type of longer funnel, more movies potentially. And we'll talk about actually the best way to actually do ad spend, which is just growing the community more so than actually promoting the movies. But one thing I wanted to kind of mention, because, you know, I know a lot of indie filmmakers out there, just getting distribution is a feat in itself. I mean, passing quality control, getting picked up by a distribution company is really, really, really one of those, you know, feats just among the community. And again, it's because making a film is incredibly difficult. But with that being said, do you want to quickly touch on how our mindset with marketing is actually one of the major reasons that it's so easy for us to talk with these distributors, because they're wired on the same level. And when we come prepared with our split test covers and everything, they typically say, hey, okay, let's go, versus a lot of conversations that might be, we need to get our marketing team involved, we'll work on this, we'll work on that, and how this is going to be one of the best ways you can put your foot forward and get in a distribution deal is showing them something that they can look at and be like, I can sell that.
No, 100%. And it's probably one of the only reasons that we're able to essentially push above our weight is because we have such a good marketing background. And, you know, there's a ton of indie films out there. There's literally like thousands coming out each month. And these distribution companies will only take 20, 30 in a year. So there's just a lot of content out there that just cannot find a home. And, you know, our stuff is very low budget, way lower than, you know, the stuff that a lot of distribution companies are working with. So it's a little bit harder for us to have those conversations, because, you know, when you're looking at a movie that's made for $500,000 or $1 million, and you look at our movie, it was made for like 20K, you know, there's just a discrepancy in quality. And obviously, like, the distribution companies want to have good quality because those are the movies that are going to sell a little bit more. But where we can push is like, all right, look, we got everything split tested, we're ready to go. You're not going to have these conversations where you're trying to make me change my cover, or fight for me for the blurb, or fight for me to, you know, cut out parts of the movie because it's not well paced. Everything's ready to go. And, you know, we understand what we're doing. We bring a lot to the table as far as our community and our marketing background. And it's just easier conversation for them because there's less risk. The biggest risk for distribution companies is their time. Like, they still have to have people and employees and manpower that's going to have to go out there and push your movie. And if you have something that, like I said before, is your most indie films are, you're pushing a rock up a hill, where ours is you just got to get the momentum going and it goes downhill. It's just an easier conversation. It just makes sense. So yeah, if you can get to this level, the distribution options that you're going to have are just much better than if you're coming with some kind of period piece drama movie with a black and white cover and a blurb that's, you know, could be its own book. It's just going to be, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah. And again, just want to kind of highlight that, because while we are at this level, it is still quite the feat to get there, because there's so much content on there. And you'll kind of see, you know, one of the biggest questions is, how do you get distribution? I think not getting distribution, honestly, is the first side effect of you not focusing on marketing from the beginning. Because if you listen to what, you know, these distributors typically say, the ones that are saying it, they say exactly what we're saying. They say, we need something that we can push. What's the point in risking it? It's still going to cost a lot. They're not trying to rip anyone off. They're just trying to do business. And they're in the same thick of it that we are, in the sense of getting eyeballs, getting it there. And when they don't have to worry about all of those things that we have buttoned up in a nice package for them, that's how we end up getting some bidding wars potentially on, you know, what package to have, because they see it's not going to require that much time for that. And they see there's already something that can go when it comes to scaling up with it. So last thing I really want to focus on, because I do think nowadays it is by far the most important thing, and I'm blown away with how quickly it's scaled up for us, but it literally is your community element. So to give you guys some background, you know, DVS Films, we were kind of always on social media. You know, we had an Instagram, for the most part, was kind of the hub. We got up to like 25,000 followers. People would see our pictures. People would, you know, engage in it to some degree. And then we ended up, you know, getting on TikTok, which is the newest platform. And I think it really just comes to a case study of, you know, it's no surprise when you hear the wave of, you know, TikTok, oh, everyone's on here, the mask there. You really do want to try and follow that as much as possible. And I know a lot of people, I myself, like I was kind of social media out, but I said, okay, let me go ahead and try this and whatnot. And I think one thing that filmmakers need to lean into heavy is that you're doing something that so many people want to do because it really is something absolutely amazing. It's a fantastic process. And we got lucky, the algorithm picked us up, and we found ourselves over 100,000 people when it comes to followers. And again, this is something where I don't think if we didn't have the girl in Cabin 13, which is where we got the behind the scenes footage, because again, I was taking behind the scenes footage way long in advance for the Instagram. So this is not us just randomly posting some stuff. This is us working over 3, 4, 5 years of kind of posting content, getting it out there that we finally really got rewarded, which generated all this attention. And more importantly, by this time that we finally got the attention, our movie, The Girl in Cabin 13, was already out and released. And this was just kind of the start of it. And we'll kind of go into detail how it evolved, but just for that start, you know, do you want to kind of talk about how that shows you just the power of organic things at your fingertip? Again, the first 100,000 followers, really, that was all organic with it. And, you know, yeah, we're putting some ad spend back into it, but really, you lean on your content. People love filmmaking. People want to be part of it. They want to hear your story.
Yeah, I mean, as a filmmaker, you're doing something really cool. And I think that social media is just, it's breaking down the barriers of like, you know, the Hollywood almost like elite, where it's kind of like standoffish, and it was really hard to kind of see what the process was. And I think a lot of people enjoy kind of like what we're doing as far as like breaking everything down. I know as a filmmaker, when I was like studying the craft, and I still study the craft, to find actual really good content, it's very difficult on YouTube or, you know, behind the scenes stuff like that, where it's actual like actionable advice. And that's like, when we're doing this podcast, I really want to try and give you like, all right, these are my mistakes and these are things that you need to do, as opposed to just talking about films and just general stuff. I'm really trying to give you actionable examples, and that stuff's all very powerful. And I think, you know, is TikTok going to be here to stay? I don't know. I've seen Facebook come and go. I've seen Instagram come and go. TikTok's just the new flavor of the week. But what TikTok does is it does break down barriers. It allows us to be, you know, more community driven. It allows us to interact with our community at a better rate. So the people who are starting TikTok now, I wouldn't be worried about getting them laid, but I would say try and get these, you know, people to move into another form that's just more community focused for us as a Discord. But if you get their email address or you send them to a website or some kind of place where, you know, you can cultivate them and not have to worry about the TikTok, because TikTok runs on an algorithm. They could change that and, you know, we could lose all our stuff overnight. So you just always want to try and cultivate the audience to take them to a place that you can control. And I think that the filmmakers that do this, you know, moving forward are going to be in a great place in the next 5 to 10 years. But it takes effort. It takes work. It's very difficult to do this. It's probably the last thing that you want to do after making your feature film. But you know, you have to do it. There's just no way around it.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you kind of brought that up, because the way that I see it is it really is that funnel that you just, and it's any kind of business funnel. And you really just want to look at how you can get them engaged in the community as much as possible. So at first, you know, like I mentioned, we had our Instagram and whatnot, and we were kind of posting here and there. And again, we got a pretty good following. Once we were able to get the traction, we were getting a lot more comments. People were watching The Girl in Cabin 13. The engagement was coming back. So you know what I did? I was like, hey, I know live videos are good. And again, I'm someone, I absolutely hate social media for the most part personally. You know, in the sense of anytime I go on a trip, so like once or twice a year, I'll post something for the most part. But that being said, it was something where I understood I had to jump in. So I started doing live streams, and the live streams I highly recommend and encourage too, because just like my brother was saying, it breaks down walls. You can literally talk to me. So you can literally talk to someone else, and it is so powerful. And because of this experience of, you know, us growing on TikTok, we expanded to everything. Now we have our YouTube and our podcast, just because we want to be incredibly accessible to anyone that wants to learn more about us, understand what we're doing, understand this craft, because there's such an interest out there. And because we have this message now, it's kind of like this snowball that's rolling. And with the live streams that I was doing, I ended up getting a few followers. Shout out to those original OGs, you know, who you guys are, who were there before we even started formulating. I was blown away. I was blown away that people would log back in and talk to me and say, hey, this is great. I love your movie. This is, you know, we had 5 or 10 followers or whatnot per live stream. That continued. We ended up getting like a group of 10 or, you know, 12 or whatnot with the original OG group of people that were just like, wait for me to go live. They talk with me. And right then and there, you're already building this relationship with your community. The next step, and this is something I would recommend to every single filmmaker out there, we decided making a Discord. And again, for those who aren't familiar with Discord, it's basically a chat software, very similar to like Microsoft Teams or a Slack, also kind of combines elements of Reddit to it, really big with gaming and a lot of different uses, but it's just a really good organization tool. So we did that and we started that back in March. And now we have 6,000 some followers in the Discord channel. And it wasn't a consistent growth. We hit some spikes. We figured out what we were doing. But what I can say with this Discord channel is because of the community we've been able to build, and it is by far the most wholesome community I've seen. We've literally changed our entire business model of saying we make movies for our fans, with our fans. And the reason we're saying this is because it is so powerful what we're building. And I don't think the I don't think anyone's really kind of seen it yet. So again, you know, I'm not going to worry, we got a long ways to still go, but this level of interaction and engagement is now possible for any filmmaker to harness. It's just being direct with your customer, with your members and people that are your fans. And if you're able to do that, you'll literally build, I mean, the people in this Discord, again, are so, they love every element of it. They love giving us feedback, and it's so symbiotic in the sense of how much it's helping us now. So do you want to kind of talk about, I don't think it's that easy because, again, it's a ton of time. I'm on live pretty much every day for 3 to 5 hours or so just to try and continue to do this. We're doing Discord events, so it takes a ton of time. But it is by far going to be the best asset moving forward because we now have a stable base, organic of any platform or any algorithm that we can then send and help us push that boulder.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can go and you can spend, you know, $10,000 on paid ads every single time your movie releases, or you can go and cultivate a community that will cost you nothing. It costs us nothing to just put that watch link in there. They're excited. They're fired up. I got like stickers on my truck from fans. So it's just a game changer. It really is. And you know, if you're not building a community, if you're not collecting email addresses, if you're not finding the people that are excited about the stuff that you're making, you're just, it's going to be that much more difficult for you. Just the feedback from the movies has just been absolutely incredible. And I really think that the Murder House, after showing it to the super fans and getting their feedback, they made that movie so much better. And I'm just really forever grateful from the feedback from it. But I also think that, I mean, we're just getting started. I think that the ideas that we're putting forward and the stuff that we're trying out right now to really grow this community as far as just building almost like a platform for them to make sure that everyone's even more engaged, get engagement, that we're giving back to the community even more because it needs to be a symbiotic relationship. You know, I can't be just asking people to buy stuff. I'm trying to build stuff and make stuff and benefit the lives of all the people who are giving me their time and their feedback. And I think we're just scratching the surface and we have a lot of cool stuff coming out and I don't know if it'll work or not. But I mean, at the bare minimum, we have a really amazing community and that's never going to go away. But if we can get some of the stuff that we're talking about to work, I think you're going to see something absolutely incredible happen here. And I'm really very, I haven't been this excited in a long time.
Yeah, like you said, we have a few things in the mix, which are going to be really awesome. But at the core of it, because of how powerful we understand this community is, it's always going to be something that we look to give back to as much as we can. I mean, it is something we're focused on. How do we reward our fans and super fans? How do we reward the people that are making us, you know, what we are? And one of the major ways that we're going to do this is have them share in our success. The more movies we're able to make, the more roles we can have. We can't wait to do a zombie movie. We can't wait to do a battle royale movie with all of our super fans. Make them part of this because this is something that is such a fun experience And with our ability to make these movies now at this budget level and the interaction we can have with our community, I think you're going to see this really take this studio to the next level and completely change, you know, the landscape. But it's also something I would just advise to anyone, because you can do this on any micro scale. You know, we've kind of put the extra effort into it, but the reason for that is we have, you know, 9 movies behind us heading into this. We had the experience. Would we be able to scale at this level if we were just at, you know, The Invited or Unseen or any of the other movies? No, this was a right timing, right place kind of thing, but it was us always looking out for it. And since we've discovered it, you know, my biggest thing, I would recommend any person to go out there on social media. If you're a creator, go live and just try and have a conversation with someone. Go on a forum, try and have a conversation with someone. Even if you're getting just feedback from 10 or 20 people and that's all your community is, that is night and day compared to someone who is either your friend or your family or anything like that, because again, you're not your audience. So I think a good place to kind of sum this up, you know, as we mentioned, we're always going to reward our super fans. It's absolutely amazing because of how much they did. Do you want to talk about how it's so important to get this community to give you the feedback, just to understand the first point of this whole thing, which is you need to have an idea that's marketable. If you don't have a community outside of your friends or your family, you're not going to give the advice. And the best advice is from people who actively found you because of the work that you put out.
Yeah. I mean, I listened. Their feedback has moved from, you know, the market feedback to the feedback that I want to hear. I don't really care about the market now. I'm trying to make movies that the community wants. And this is the reason we're doing Into the Forest 2.0. That movie didn't sell very well. It was sort of like a cult classic on the DBS scale where, you know, there's a lot of problems with the movie, but it was, you know, kind of a cool concept. And it resonated with our fans, and they were like, you know, every time we do like a Q&A, they'd be like, what about Into the Forest? What about Into the Forest? What about Into the Forest? And I had never thought about remaking Into the Forest. I mean, I thought about making similar concepts to it because the core story stuff is really cool in that movie. But I just think we just didn't execute it, and it was just kind of like all over the place. But they wanted it. And, you know, we've spent time and money to essentially remake this movie and make a 2.0 version of that. I mean, that being said, though, this is by far our best script. Like, so I would have never had this conversation, or I've never would have had the opportunity to really write this script if I didn't listen to the feedback that the community gave me. And, you know, I'm over the moon because this script that we're going to do now, I've never felt more confident about a script than this one. And usually I'm starting to get to the point in the skill level where if I feel really good about a script, I could probably shoot the shit out of it. So I feel pretty good with it. It is found footage. So I've never shot a found footage myself. That being said, we're going to put a lot of pre-production into this and we'll make it good. But if this movie turns out really, really good, and I feel like it might, then, you know, I only have the community to thank, because I would have never done this. I would have never made another Into the Forest 2.0 movie. I would have done something else, or I would have moved on to Morgan Estate, or I would have, you know, made something else essentially. So the fact that we could be on a game-changing movie, and it's just all due to the community, it's just listening to feedback, which comes back to the point where you're not your audience, and you have to listen to feedback, you have to learn, and you have to take in feedback. And the best feedback that you're going to get is from the community that you create and you cultivate, because those are your true fans. And you're doing everyone a disservice if you're not actively engaging and working with the fans that love your stuff.
100%. And that's, again, you know, why we make movies for our fans, with our fans, and why we're going to continue to do so. And I completely agree. I mean, I've never been more confident in the marketing of the idea of Into the Forest 2.0 based on the feedback we've been getting from the super fans, based on everything. I just really think it's so much clearer now. And it is something where, you know, going into this process, I was like, we're never doing found footage ever again. I'll be the first person to tell you, I'm so sick of indie found footage that it drives me up a wall. The 2 found footage movies we did were the least favorite. I can keep beating this drum forever. But the sheer feedback we got from the super fans, the sheer feedback we got from the community, and these are our people, you know, this is them. Overwhelming. They're like, what about Into the Forest? And with that being said, Into the Forest 2.0, here we go. We're going to give you guys a lot more updates on that when it comes to the process as it's playing out. But that's going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Again, be sure to be part of this Discord community. Check out everything we're talking about. I guarantee you, you will be blown away. It is by far the nicest and most wholesome community I've ever seen. And it's something we want to continue to reward and scale. So if you're hearing this right now, you still got plenty of time. We got a lot to do. And I can't wait to see how it scales. But until then, have a good one.